All right, so you want to understand the inner workings of life insurance underwriting, huh? Well, you came to the right place. Today, we're going deep, deep into how insurance companies figure out who gets covered and what they'll pay.
Yeah, it's like a peek behind the curtain, right?
Exactly. And to guide us on this journey, we'll be using a chapter from a textbook on life and health insurance. Don't worry, though. We'll keep things lively. You'll learn how this whole process actually benefits both you and the insurer.
That's right. It's not just about the company protecting themselves.
Plus, we'll uncover some surprising factors that can affect your rates. Like, did you know your driving record could play a role?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Huh. And we'll also be talking about something called the MIB.
The MIB? Sounds mysterious.
It kind of is. It stands for the Medical Information Bureau. People often think it's this huge secret blacklist.
Oh, like you're on the naughty list for insurance.
Right, exactly. But it's not really like that. It's more of a database where insurance companies share information, you know, to prevent fraud and stuff, make sure everyone's playing fair.
Okay, so not as scary as it sounds. So let's start at the very beginning, the application.
Ah, yes. The foundation of it all.
And this is where the insurance agent kind of steps into the role of field underwriter, right? They guide you through the whole thing, making sure everything is accurate and complete.
And confidentiality is key here. You're sharing a lot of personal stuff, so the agent's got to keep it all under wraps. It's about building trust and being transparent right from the start.
Right. Makes total sense. Now, this is where things get a little, well, interesting. Ever heard of backdating?
Backdating. Yeah, that can be a useful tool. Basically, it means adjusting the effective date of the policy. Sometimes it can reflect a younger age for the applicant, which, you know, could mean lower premiums.
So, like, if you're about to hit a certain age, that bumps you into a higher rate category.
Exactly. Backdating could potentially save you some money in those situations.
Clever. But I'm guessing there are some rules around that, right?
Oh, for sure. You can usually only go back a maximum of 6 months, and you got to pay those premiums for the backdated period, so it's not a free lunch or anything.
Right, right. Okay, so after the main application is all filled out, there's this thing called the producer's report. This is where the agent jots down their observations about you. Things like your financial situation, personal habits, even your overall character. Kind of makes you think twice about those late night pizza orders, huh?
Well, it's more about getting a holistic picture. You know, it goes beyond just the hard facts on the application.
And is that report, like, confidential?
Oh, absolutely. You, as the applicant, don't actually get to see it.
Interesting. Okay, so once the application is all wrapped up and submitted, it goes off to a company underwriter for review.
Yep, that's when the real investigation begins.
Time to put on the Deerstalker hat.
Right, huh? Exactly. The underwriter becomes like a financial Sherlock Holmes. They pour over all the information you provided in the application, looking for any inconsistencies, red flags, and anything that needs a closer look.
So it's like they're piecing together a puzzle. Each bit of information helps them build a complete picture of your risk level.
That's a great way to put it. And sometimes, to complete that picture, they might need more information. They might request something called an attending physician's statement from your doctor.
Ah, so they're going straight to the source.
Yep. It's all about getting the most accurate information possible. And for larger policies, they might require medical exams or testing, too. These help verify what you've told them and give a clearer picture of your current health.
Makes sense. But who foots the bill for those exams?
Don't worry about that. The insurance company covers those costs.
Okay, good to know. Now, let's talk about something a bit sensitive, AIDS considerations.
Right. This is important. Underwriters have to follow very strict legal and ethical guidelines.
Of course.
They absolutely cannot discriminate based on sexual orientation, but they are allowed to ask specific questions related to an AIDS diagnosis. It's about accurately assessing your medical situation, but any required AIDS testing needs your written consent.
Okay, so you're in control of what information is shared.
Exactly.
All right, let's finally demystify this MIB thing, the Medical Information Bureau.
Remember, it's not a blacklist. It's simply a database. Insurance companies use it to share information, prevent fraud, things like that.
So if one company finds something questionable, like, say, a misrepresentation of your medical history,
they can report it to the MIB. Yeah.
And then if you apply for insurance with another company down the line, they can see that information.
Right. It's all about checks and balances.
Yeah.
You know. But you do have rights when it comes to the MIB. You can find out what information they have on you. You can even request a copy of your report.
Okay, that's good to know. You have some control over the process.
Absolutely.
Now, beyond the MIB, I understand underwriters might also look at your credit report.
That's right. might seem a bit strange, but life insurance is a long-term financial commitment for the insurer.
Yeah, they're in it for the long haul.
Exactly. So they want to see how you handle your finances, if you have a history of paying your bills on time, that kind of thing. Helps them assess their own financial risk in covering you.
So kind of like checking someone's references before hiring them?
In a way, yes. And sometimes they might even go a step further and request an investigative consumer report, sometimes called an inspection report.
Oh, wow. What's that entail?
It's basically a deeper dive into your background. They might interview people who know you, neighbors, friends, colleagues, like a background check, but for insurance, you could say.
Sounds intense. I'm guessing they have to get your consent for that one.
Oh, absolutely. Your privacy is protected throughout the entire process.
Good, good. So let's say the underwriter has gathered all this information about you. What's the next step?
Well, now they use all that data to classify you into a risk category.
So they figure out where you fit in based on your overall risk profile.
Exactly. And there are four main classifications: standard, preferred, substandard, and declined.
Okay, can you break those down for us? What do they mean exactly?
Sure. Standard risk is pretty straightforward. It means you're in average health, you have a normal life expectancy, you fit right into what insurance companies expect, so you'd be offered standard rates.
Okay, makes sense. What about preferred risk?
Preferred risks are the superstars of insurance. They're in excellent health, have a lower chance of making a claim. They often get lower premiums, too. Maybe they have a healthy lifestyle, a clean medical history, a low-risk job.
So being healthy pays off in more ways than one.
It certainly does.
All right, now what about the not-so-desirable category, substandard risk?
Substandard risks are folks who present a higher risk to the insurer. There are all sorts of reasons for this. Maybe a health condition, a dangerous job, risky hobbies, things like that.
So higher premiums then?
Maybe. Or they might have certain exclusions in their policy to offset that increased risk. And then there's the decline category, the one nobody wants.
Right, but it happens. What does it actually mean if someone gets declined for life insurance?
It simply means that the insurer doesn't think you're insurable at this time. It's not a judgment or anything, just a reflection of the level of risk you represent.
It's important to remember that insurance companies have to manage risk for all their policyholders, right? They have to make those tough calls to keep things fair and sustainable for everyone.
Exactly. And a decline isn't always permanent. You might be able to reapply later. Maybe your health improves or you make some lifestyle changes.
Okay, so there's hope. So let's imagine you've made it through the whole underwriting process and you're approved for a policy. What happens next?
Well, then the policy has to be delivered. This is usually done in person by the insurance agent.
I like that personal touch. I bet it's good to have someone walk you through all the details one last time, answer any questions you might have.
Exactly. It's your chance to review everything, make sure you understand it all.
And I think at this point, you also sign a statement of good health, right? Just confirming nothing major has changed with your health since the application?
That's right.
Now, the effective date of coverage, that can be a little tricky. I know it depends on when you paid that first premium.
Yep, it does. If you paid when you applied, coverage usually starts on the application date or the date of the medical exam if you needed one. But if you waited to pay until the policy was delivered, then it kicks in on the policy issuance date.
Okay, so timelines matter. Got it. Well, we can't wrap up our deep dive without talking about some of the federal laws and regulations that impact life and health insurance.
Absolutely. It's a whole legal landscape designed to protect you, the consumer.
Right. Make sure things are fair and transparent.
Exactly. And one of the big ones is the Fair Credit Reporting Act, or FCRA.
Ah, yes, the FCRA. We touched on it earlier when we were talking about credit reports, but I'd love to hear more about what it does and how it protects us.
Well, it's all in the name, really. The FCRA is about making sure the information used to make those big underwriting decisions is accurate. It also guarantees your rights when it comes to your credit report.
So if they're using my credit report to assess my financial risk, I have the right to know what's on it, right?
Absolutely. And you can dispute anything that's wrong. You can access your credit report, you can review it for errors, and you can request corrections.
So it's not just a suggestion?
Nope. The FCRA has teeth. It imposes penalties on anyone who breaks the law.
Okay, good to know. It's reassuring that those safeguards are in place.
And beyond the FCRA, there are other laws that deal with those times when, well, mistakes happen. Errors or omissions during the application or claims process.
Like human error, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Like an agent accidentally putting in the wrong birth date or something. These laws make sure that insurance agents and companies are held accountable for their actions, that everything is handled ethically.
It's all about accountability and fairness, really.
That's it.
Now, speaking of ethical considerations, earlier you mentioned Stella Lie and Iolai Lie. Can you remind me what those stand for and why they're so controversial?
Of course. Stolen Eye stands for Stranger-Owned Life Insurance, and IOI is Investor-Owned Life Insurance. It's basically where investors convince someone, often seniors, to take out a life insurance policy and name them, the investors, as the beneficiaries.
So strangers profiting from someone else's death.
Pretty much. And that's why many people consider it predatory. The investors don't actually have what's called an insurable interest in the person. Thankfully, many states are banning or putting limits on these types of transactions.
It's good to see that happening. It reminds us that life insurance is supposed to be about protecting loved ones, not about making money off someone else's life.
Exactly.
Okay, let's shift gears a bit. Talk about the USA Patriot Act. I know it's about more than just terrorism.
Right, it is. It also aims to prevent money laundering, and that's where insurance companies come in.
Oh, right. You mentioned that. They have to report suspicious activity.
They do. They need to have anti-money laundering programs in place. You know, just in case someone tries to pay for a massive life insurance policy with a suitcase full of cash, for instance.
Right, that would raise a few eyebrows.
It would. And the insurance company would be required to report it. It's about making sure the financial system isn't being used for illegal activities.
Makes sense. Okay, last but not least, let's touch on ERISA, the Employee Retirement Income Security Act.
This one's especially important for folks who have group life insurance through their employer.
So if I'm covered under my work's group life insurance, ERISA is watching out for me.
That's right. It sets strict rules for the people who manage and administer those plans. It makes sure they're acting in the best interest of the participants, being transparent about how the plans work.
Okay, good to know. Sounds like a lot of laws and regulations in the insurance world.
There are, and it's all about protecting the consumer, maintaining the integrity of the system.
Right, right. Well, we've covered a lot of ground in this first part of our deep dive. We started with the application process, explored the fascinating world of underwriting and risk assessment, and even delved into the legalities of it all.
It's been quite a journey, but we're not done yet.
Stay tuned for part two, where we'll continue to explore the ins and outs of life insurance underwriting and uncover even more insights to help you navigate this world. Welcome back to our deep dive into life insurance underwriting. So we've already covered a lot of ground, you know, from the application process to the MIB and everything in between. But before we move on, I wanted to circle back to something you mentioned earlier, risk classification. You explained those four main categories, standard, preferred, substandard, and declined. But I'm kind of curious, how do they actually decide who goes where? You know, how do those classifications get determined in real life?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, it's one thing to lay out the categories, but it's another to see how they're applied, you know, to real people.
Right.
Let's take substandard risk as an example. Mm-hmm. Imagine someone who loves to, say, skydive.
Okay, an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah, exactly. Now, skydiving, as fun as it might be, well, it's pretty risky, right? So an underwriter might classify that person as a substandard risk. Why? Because statistically, skydivers, they have a higher chance of accidental death compared to someone who, let's say, enjoys knitting.
So their love for extreme sports could mean higher premiums.
Precisely. The insurer has to factor that increased risk in somehow, you know. Mm-hmm. They might still offer the policy, but at a higher premium, or maybe with some specific exclusions related to, well, jumping out of perfectly good airplanes.
I guess that makes sense. It's not about judging someone's lifestyle, but about making sure the whole system is fair and sustainable for everyone, right?
Absolutely. It's all about balance. And it's important to remember that, you know, underwriters have to operate ethically. They can't discriminate unfairly when they're classifying risks. So things like race, religion, national origin, even where you live, those can't factor into their decisions.
So no redlining in the insurance world. Good to know.
Exactly. And actually, most states go even further. They prohibit discrimination based on things like being blind or being a victim of domestic violence.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that. It's reassuring that those protections are in place, that everyone has a fair shot at getting insurance, regardless of their background or circumstances.
Absolutely. That's the goal.
Okay. So let's say you've made it through the entire underwriting process. You've jumped through all the hoops, answered all the questions, and you're approved for policy. What happens next?
Well, congratulations are in order. But the journey's not over yet. The policy actually has to be delivered. And this is often done in person by the insurance agent.
Ah, the human touch. I think that's a good thing. It's nice to have someone walk you through it one last time you know, answer any final questions. Just make that personal connection.
You're absolutely right. It's a chance to go over the coverage again, make sure everything's crystal clear, have all your questions answered.
And this is when they sign the statement of good health too, right? You know, confirming that nothing major has changed with their health since they applied.
Yep, exactly. Just a final check to make sure everything's still accurate.
Now, about the effective date of coverage, I know that can be a little confusing. It all depends on when that first premium was paid, right?
That's right. It can get a little tricky. If you paid the premium when you applied, then coverage usually starts on the application date or on the date of the medical exam if one was needed. But if you didn't pay until the policy was delivered, then it starts on the policy issuance date.
So it's important to pay attention to those dates.
It is. You got to know when you're actually covered.
Okay, so we can't wrap up this deep dive without diving into some of the federal laws and regulations that govern both life and health insurance. I mean, these are the rules of the road, right? They're there to protect you, the consumer.
You got it. And one of the most important ones is the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the FCRA.
The FCRA, right. I remember we talked about that a bit earlier when we were discussing credit reports, but I'd love to dig a little deeper. How does it work? How does it actually protect us?
Well, the name pretty much says it all. It's all about making sure the information that's used to make those big underwriting decisions is accurate. And it also guarantees your rights when it comes to your credit report.
So, like, if the underwriter is looking at my credit report to see how risky I am financially, I have a right to know what's in there, right?
Exactly. And you can challenge anything that's not right. You can get a copy of your credit report, review it, and if there are any errors, you can ask for them to be corrected.
Okay, good. So they can't just do whatever they want with that information.
Nope. The FCRA has some serious teeth. It can impose penalties on anyone who violates it. So companies have to take it seriously.
That's good to hear. Makes me feel better knowing those protections are there.
And then there are other laws, too. You know, for those times when honest mistakes happen, errors or omissions during the application process, or even when someone files a claim.
You mean like human error?
Exactly. Someone accidentally enters the wrong birth date or forgets to include something. These laws make sure that agents and companies are held accountable for their actions. You know, everything's handled ethically.
It's all about fairness, right?
Yep, that's it.
Now, speaking of ethical considerations, earlier you mentioned STOLI and IOLI. I'm drawing a blank.
Mm-hmm.
What were those again, and why are they considered so controversial?
Oh, sure. STOLI stands for Stranger-Owned Life Insurance, and IOLI is Investor-Owned Life Insurance. They're basically these schemes where investors, sometimes they target older folks, they convince them to take out a life insurance policy and name them, the investors, as the beneficiary.
See, strangers are making money off of someone else's death.
That's the gist of it.
Yeah.
It's pretty messed up. That's why a lot of people see it's predatory. These investors, they don't actually have what's called an insurable interest in the person they're, well, insuring. Thankfully, a lot of states are cracking down on these schemes, you know, banning them or at least putting some serious limits on them.
That's good to hear. Life insurance should be about taking care of your loved ones, not about making a quick buck off of someone else's life.
I couldn't agree more.
Okay, let's move on. I want to talk about the USA Patriot Act. I know a lot of people associate it with, well, you know, terrorism, but it actually has a much wider scope.
Oh, yeah, it does. It's also about cracking down on money laundering, and that's where the insurance industry comes in.
Right. You were saying how insurance companies have to be on the lookout for any suspicious activity.
Exactly. They're required to have these anti-money laundering programs in place. You know, just in case someone tries to pay for a $1 million life insurance policy with a suitcase full of cash.
Right. That would definitely raise some red flags.
For sure. And they'd have to report it to the authorities. It's about making sure the financial system isn't being used for any funny business.
Makes sense. Makes sense. Okay. Last one for today. ERISA. What does that stand for again?
The Employee Retirement Income Security Act. It's a mouthful, I know.
It is. What's it all about?
Well, it's particularly important for folks who have group life insurance through their employer.
So if I'm covered under my company's group life insurance plan, ERISA is looking out for me.
You got it. It sets a bunch of rules for how those plans are managed and administered. Make sure the people in charge are acting in the best interest of the participants and that they're being upfront about how everything works.
That's reassuring. Sounds like there's a whole lot of oversight in the insurance world.
Oh, there is. It's a complex system, but it's all designed to protect the consumer, you know, to keep everything running smoothly and fairly.
Well, we've explored so much already. We've gone deep into the underwriting process, delved into risk classification, and even navigated the legal maze of the insurance industry. And believe it or not, there's still more to uncover.
You're telling me. We've covered a lot of ground, but this deep dive isn't over yet. We still have to consider what the future holds for underwriting. You know, how technology is going to change everything.
Okay, that's next time then. Stay tuned for part 3, where we'll wrap up our exploration of life insurance underwriting and take a peek into what the future holds for this ever-evolving field. All right, welcome back for the final part of our deep dive into life insurance underwriting. We've gone from the nitty-gritty of those applications, all that risk assessment stuff, to the laws that keep everything in check. But now I gotta ask, what about the future? You were hinting at some pretty big changes coming down the pike, right?
Oh, absolutely. Underwriting, like pretty much everything else these days, it's being transformed by technology. We're heading towards a future where data plays an even bigger role in how they assess risk. Could make the whole process faster, more personalized, maybe even more accurate.
Okay, that sounds kind of cool, but also a little bit like something out of, you know, Black Mirror. Can you give me some real-world examples of how technology is shaking things up?
Well, think about all the data we create every single day. Our fitness trackers, smartwatches, even our online shopping habits. It's like this huge stream of information that can tell a story about our health, our lifestyle choices, even our financial behavior.
So you're saying my Fitbit could determine my life insurance premiums. That's both fascinating and a little creepy, don't you think?
It's true. There are some really exciting possibilities, but also some valid concerns. Some companies are already experimenting with using wearable technology to track things like physical activity, sleep patterns, even heart rate variability. And all that data could be used to offer, you know, personalized premiums based on your actual health and lifestyle.
So it's kind of like going back to the days of those individualized assessments, but with a super high-tech twist.
Exactly. It's like blending the old with the new. And it's not just wearables. Artificial intelligence, machine learning, they're being used to analyze mountains of data, find patterns, and make predictions about risk with, well, increasing accuracy.
So we could see a future where those underwriting decisions are made in minutes, not days or weeks. It's possible, yeah. Which, of course, raises all sorts of questions about transparency, fairness, you know, even potential bias. If algorithms are making these calls, we got to make sure they're doing it ethically, that they're not just reinforcing existing inequalities.
Right. We don't want technology to make things worse, right?
Exactly. We got to be really careful about those downsides, make sure that human oversight is still a key part of the process. But I think technology also has the potential to make life insurance more accessible, more affordable for a lot more people.
Okay, so it's not all doom and gloom. So as we wrap up our deep dive into this whole world of life insurance underwriting, what's the one thing you want our listeners to take away from all this, especially with all these changes on the horizon? You know, I think the most important thing to remember is that life insurance underwriting, at its heart, it's really about understanding and managing risk. Whether that's based on those traditional factors like your medical history, your driving record, or these newer data sources like wearables and online behavior, the goal is still the same. Create a system that's fair and sustainable for everyone.
That's a great point. It's not just about crunching numbers, right? It's about finding that balance between individual risk and the well-being of the whole group.
Absolutely. And as technology keeps changing the insurance landscape, it's more important than ever for consumers to, you know, stay informed, ask questions, and stand up for their rights.
Okay, words to live by. So if someone's listening to all this and feeling a little overwhelmed by all the information about underwriting, what's one practical piece of advice you'd give them?
Don't be afraid to ask questions. Whether you're talking to an agent, doing research online, or even just chatting with friends or family, the more you know, the better. The more you understand about how this whole underwriting thing works, the better decisions you can make. Decisions that are right for you, for your needs, and your goals.
Great advice. Always good to be informed. Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into the world of life insurance underwriting. I want to thank you for joining us on this journey. We covered a ton of information, but I hope you found it helpful, maybe even a little bit insightful.
It was my pleasure. And hey, if you ever find yourself needing to navigate the sometimes confusing world of insurance, don't be shy about reaching out for help. There are resources out there, people who can guide you and help you find the right protection for you and your loved ones.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Thanks again for being here. And to everyone listening, until next time, stay informed, stay protected, and keep on learning.